So nice. So lovely to sit together. So today I wanted to share, I've shared about this book before, Deepama by Amy Schmidt. And Deepama, if you don't know this book, I totally recommend it. And I know some time ago I shared from this book, one of the many things that delights me about this book is, just to give a little context, Deepama, was this very diminutive, tiny Bangladeshi woman who had enormous suffering. She was married when she was 12. She was married to a gentleman much older than she was, had three kids, two of which died. Then she lost her husband. Had always wanted to practice, but couldn't. Her husband didn't want her to practice. So much suffering. And when two of the three kids died and her husband died, she just fell into this intense depression. Couldn't get out of bed. And a friend had said, why don't you go sit? And she went to study with Munindraji, who was the teacher of Kamala Masters and Steve Smith, among other teachers. And she did. And clearly this woman had a lot of practice in other lifetimes, if one believes in such things, because she became such a master so quickly. Went through a period of being able to, was willing to share so the supernatural powers, which some would dub parlor tricks, in which she could. And this laid out in the teachings that at a certain point of level of concentration, with the mind so clear and focused, one is able to change elements. So change earth element into water. And there's a story of her walking with her sister and they're really hot. So they change the path in front of them. That's dirt into water, go swimming, come out dripping wet. Or Munindraji is teaching and looks out the window and there's Deepama floating because she was able to change the air element into earth and rest in the house. So I've shared that before, which is awesome. And I'd recommend the book just for that. And there's this other, and at one point the teacher's like, knock off the parlor tricks. That's not what this is about. This is about really steadying the mind. And as Deepama shared in the book that Amy wrote, that for her mindfulness, the practice and love, they were the same thing. Abiding in a sense of mindfulness was abiding in this place of love. And the book is, Amy describes her life and then she has all these quotes from teachers, and Deepama very much was a teacher to Joseph Goldstein and Sharon and Sylvia, Jack Engler, all the sort of first generation teachers in this lineage. And they would go study with her in India. And in the early mid 80s, these teachers brought Deepama to the States, to IMS, to our sister center in Barrie. And there are actually, I discovered, she's on Dharma Seed. So if you have the fortitude there, she teaches in Bangladeshi and then they're translated, but just to hear her voice is remarkable. And there are some videos. Anyway, at one point when Jack was in India, he said to her like, what's your mind like? And her response was, my mind is pure concentration, awareness, and loving kindness. And it just was like the room went really silent. And Jack just audibly was like, and just that amazing embodiment of a concentrated mind. And the different teachers share, and I've heard them talk about her experience with her, but in the book about that she was just this luminous being. And what I feel is so important for us as women practitioners is she's dubbed the patron saint of householders, that she was a mom. And even when she intensely went into practice, she had a young daughter and her family was all around her. And that when her Sangha was in her little place where she lived and people would just pack in there, four flights up the stairs and pack in, that she didn't go into the monastery. She didn't take robes. She was able to reach such a profound level of, shall I say, enlightenment, just from much like our lives. Yeah. And that she was a householder, we are householders. And this incredible reality that this is possible. And in the book, actually in a talk, I listened to a talk that Amy gave about the book. And she said that the four gifts of Deepama, one was spiritual urgency, that she had such a craving for practice for the first 4 decades. She didn't start practicing until she was 47 years old. Hooray for those of us who feel we maybe got a late start. But she could never get there for various external circumstances. And so spiritual urgency, that sense of if you can practice, to practice. Joseph has a story that when she was at IMS, she was like, look, it's not that hard to be as concentrated as me. You just have to work. And she said, just sit for 2 days. And he kind of chuckled because he's like thinking like a Spirit Rock retreat, 2 days, which is sort of you wake up and walk and sit and eat. And she was like, no, like straight, 48 hours straight. And he's like, yeah, no, not so much. And Michelle McDonald, who I love, teacher in Hawaii, shares when she was watching her in the winter, because she came to teach the 3-month retreat at IMS, and Deepama was in her light white robe after teaching. And Michelle said she was so happy to go back to her room and take a nap. And she looks out the window and sees Deepama doing her walking meditation in the snow. And Michelle is just like, I bow to you and I'm going to take my nap. But one of the inspirations, one of the gifts of Deepama is this sense of spiritual urgency, that we never don't have time. We can tell ourselves, I can't possibly have time, but can we find 5 minutes? Can we find 2 minutes? Can we allow, and she talks about this, our lives to really just be infused with a sense of mindfulness, whether we're doing dishes or making the bed, doing laundry, all these householder items, that too can be infused with a sense of practice. Yes, time on the cushion, walking, standing, beautiful, absolutely. And because we're not in monasteries with that kind of structure, okay, how do we allow the day-to-day, the mundane of our lives to be practice, places of practice, like washing the dishes? The second gift was said to be of patience from Deepama. And this, for her, she had to be patient for so many decades before she could actually get to a place of practice. And I do want to say, by the time when, as I had said earlier, she was so depressed, but also had so many physical ailments. But she basically had to literally crawl her way to the first place where she was going to sit. And through her practice, she was able to heal her body. And she definitely came in with a particular karma stream. But that her dedication to the practice is really what oozes from her teachings. But part of what is embedded in that is a sense of patience, of we let the practice work through us. Can we stay open with a sense of patience with our own minds that we may want them to be otherwise, or our own bodies, but also with our own sense of practice? I remember early in my sitting days that was told that our practice has been measured in decades. How's it going? How are the first 10 years going? Yeah. So to be able to just understand this, ideally for many of us, is just a life path. And to not feel this rush of, I'm not seeing the results I feel like I should. One, we don't know. The fruits bear fruit when they bear fruit. We don't know when that necessarily will be, but being able to be patient with ourselves, patient with those around us, patient with the world that we are in, that may not be the way we want it to be, right? Things that are unfolding that we really might not agree with or like. Okay. Can we take that 30,000 foot view, landing in that place of upekkha, of equanimity? The fourth gift is that of faith from Deepama. There's a line either in the talk or in the book of, can we allow our faith to be stronger than the stories of the mind? And I love that notion of, because the mind can be so persuasive one way or the other. It is always looking for evidence of this is wrong or this is right. And it's not always trustworthy. And being able to, and so I love this practice of watching the thinking mind, to be able to stretch that muscle of not always reliable. You know, we can make a case pretty much for anything. And we can see our world through this lens of collecting evidence to make a certain point. And being able to come back, what do I really want to rest upon? What do I want to trust? Yeah, it's faith. The Pali word for faith is sadha. My favorite translation of sadha is, what do we rest the heart upon? What is trustworthy? And in so doing, allowing there to be a faith, and faith in this context is in some ways also defined as faith in our capacity to meet what comes, right? So I'm not talking about, I was raised Catholic. It's not that kind of faith. It's more internally directed. Can I have faith in my ability to meet what comes with a steady mind and open heart at times, right? We know the mind will get hindered and clouded, and we know the heart will close. Okay, but can I have faith in my confidence, faith in my ability to meet what comes? Can I set the intention? Yeah, to have faith in my capacity to meet what comes. And again, Deepama, because she went through so much, you know, so much death and so much hardship in her life, it's a lot of credibility of what she lived through. And then the powers through her concentration, through her profound striving in her practice. The fourth gift is said to be of metta, and the sense of her equating mindfulness and metta of love and mindfulness. She's like, no difference. It's the same. I want to share. I have a lot. I bookmarked a lot. I wanted to share a little bit, not all of the highlights, but just some. She was at the lowest point in her life. The Buddha appeared to her in a dream, a luminous presence. He softly chanted a verse from the Dhammapada, originally offered as a consolation to a father grieving for the death of his son. And this is what she heard in the dream. Clinging to what is dear brings sorrow. Clinging to what is dear brings fear. To one who is entirely free from endearment, there is no sorrow or fear. When Deepama awoke, she felt clear and calm. She knew she must learn to meditate no matter what the state of her health. She understood the Buddha's advice. If she wanted true peace, she had to practice until she was free from all attachment and sorrow. And this is not, there can be kind of a confusion around attachment, particularly around like the love we might feel for people, our children, perhaps, or our pets, or the world around us, or our dear ones. And it's not about not loving, right? It's not attachment in the psychological sense of attachment styles. It's more the degree to which we hold on. You know, the Mary Oliver poem, our job is, I'm not going to quite get it, but sort of love what we can while we have it. And then when it's gone, let go. So it's not about not loving. It's just the skillfulness of not being so gripped by it. This is so presenting tough but effective lessons for people who wanted to meditate in the midst of busy lives as householders. So all of us. Deepama taught her students to use every moment as an opportunity for practice. Here we go. Mindfulness, she said, could be applied to every activity. Speaking, ironing, cooking, shopping, caring for children. The whole path of mindfulness, she repeated tirelessly, is this. Whatever you are doing, be aware of it. And very similar to some of, to what Thich Nhat Hanh was saying, like, it's just right here. It's right here. Deepama had so much faith in the power of practice amid the hubbub of home life that one admirer dubbed her the patron saint of householders. You cannot separate meditation from life. And again, I love this. And for us, it's not always easy to go on retreat, like physically. this is nice, we can do it at home, but not being, to not feel like somehow that hinders our ability to practice. No, it's this, it's our relationships, it's the context, it's how do we meet our sense when ourselves when we're overwhelmed or we're off kilter or we're stressed or we're lonely. How do we meet ourselves there? That's the practice, right? Oh, it's like this right now. Okay. Can there be a sense of spaciousness around meeting how we are? Can we have faith in our capacity to meet it, right? Can we be patient with ourselves? And can we embody, drink in the sense of metta, of friendliness? Oh, it's like this. Okay. She had 10 lessons that she shared. 10 lessons of practice. Sorry. Lesson one. Choose one meditation practice and stick with it. If you want to progress in meditation, stay with one technique. And at Spirit Rock, more historically than is true now, we had teachers from all different lineages coming, and often teachers will sort of claim to be sort of Buddhists have some Tibetan practice and some Zen practice and this and that, all of which is lovely. So it's not to say anything's wrong or bad, but to allow there to be enough space to get skilled, to develop some skill around. So if it's a metta practice, to try a meditation practice for a while, instead of every day it being a different practice, follow what works, but see what it's like. Okay, I'm going to do a month of metta practice, or I'll do a month of working with the mind, and just to see what happens, to notice whatever the progression might be. Yeah, again, it's really gentle, but what it might be worth sticking with for a week or a month, 2 years, you know, whatever amount of time feels right. But being able to say, like, okay, I'm going to make a commitment to one type of practice, because as we know, there are many. The second lesson, meditate every day. You know, everyone says it, and really let's set the bar so we can feel successful. 5 minutes. Okay. Or walking, when we're walking from here to there, to allow that to be the practice, but dedicating some time. Okay, this is practice. Washing the dishes, can we be aware? Lesson three, I love it. Any situation is workable. Each of us has enormous power. It can be used to help ourselves and to help others. But Deepa Ma came to understand that she could make her family a part of the journey. Her approach was a radical inclusiveness, everything and the kitchen sink. So a radical inclusiveness of all aspects of our lives. Everything is workable. Everything is fruit for practice. So permissive. Again, for so much permission granted in this invitation of it's all right here. When we can go on retreat, that's wonderful. And for most of us, the majority of our time is not spent on retreat. Okay, so here it is. The mornings, the afternoons, the evenings, the times with our loved ones, the times when we're alone. This is practice, right? Every situation. Lesson four, patience. Patience is one of the most important virtues for developing mindfulness and concentration. Free the mind. Here we go. Your mind is all stories. Deepa Ma did not say the mind is mostly stories. She said there is nothing in the mind but stories. There are personal dramas that create and maintain a sense of individual identity, who we are, what we do, what we are not capable of doing. Without our being aware of it, the endless series of thoughts drives and limits our lives. And yet those stories are without substance. I feel like that's the whole teaching right there. Yeah. Without being aware of it, these endless series of such thoughts drives and limits our lives. And yet these stories are without substance. And this is when Jack asked, what is it like in your mind? She closed her eyes and quietly answered, in my mind, there are three things: concentration, loving kindness, and peace. Six, cool the fires of emotion. Anger is a fire. Anger is a fire, but I don't feel any heat. It comes and it dies right out. Again, permission. It comes, it dies right out. There's enough spaciousness to allow whatever emotions come, fear, rage, hatred, loneliness, all the myriad of emotions, they can come in. Okay. We don't have to get all involved. That's some deep practice. And sometimes it's just a moment of freedom from them. Oh, this is here. Okay. I can watch it. And I love this because it's not denying it. It's just, it can come. Okay. And then we work with it. All things are workable. Seven, have fun along the way. I don't know if you can see this because it's not a very good photo. She has a truck on her head. So if her little, her grandson was with her while she's teaching, and he's being however old he is, 3 or 4, running all around. And some would say he's being a distraction. She's like, come here. Had him come sit on her lap, and he was playing with a truck, and she put the truck on his head. Gave the talk with the truck on her head. So it doesn't have to be all serious and silent and tight, right? Stay playful. So another, you know, I talk about the Desmond Tutu Dalai Lama book all the time of joy. Where is there joy? Can we infuse our practice with a sense of joy? It doesn't have to be like, I'm going to be concentrated with all the tenseness that can come with that. What's fun? Where's there playfulness in the practice and in our lives, but in the practice too? Lesson eight, simplify, live simply. A very simple life is good for everything. Too much luxury is a hindrance to practice. Just as in meditation, we practice giving our full attention to one thing at a time. Deepa Ma did each thing completely without worrying about the next. Thoughts of the past and the future spoil your time. And whatever she did, she was fully present with ease, stillness, and simplicity. Nine, lesson nine, cultivate the spirit of blessing. If you bless those around you, this will inspire you to be attentive in every moment. So it's the story about her blessing the pilot and teaching a pilot who was her student, like, bless all your passengers when they come on board. You know, as we're driving, those of us who drive, to bless the other passengers in the car when we see people, when we're walking, or the ways in which we interact with humans and animals and other beings, offer a blessing, whatever that might look like, whether it's a metaphrase, maybe happy, or just some kind of goodwill, practice of blessings. And then the final lesson, it is a circular journey. Meditation integrates the whole person. Buddhists speak metaphorically of leaving the world and coming back to the world, but in truth, there is neither leaving nor returning. We can't leave or return to our essence. It's the rock bottom truth of our being, because it is and has always been right here, hidden by only a thin film of ignorance. You don't discover it, rather you allow it to come forth. And that's what we do here each week, right? We clear away some of the hindrances, maybe for a moment, maybe for a longer period of time. Oh, right, this is me. This birthright of ours, their inner Buddha nature, if those words resonate, of quiet mind, open heart. The Buddha taught, this is our birthright. It's right here. It just gets hindered and complicated, yeah, by our stories, by different conditions of our lives. And how can we give ourselves the freedom, I spoke of this last week, from the relying upon external conditions for our own happiness, right? It's inwardly generated, and allowing there to be, oh, it's right here. And it's a circular journey. The beauty of the spiritual journey is that the empath invariably takes us around back to our point of departure. When Deepima suffered her childlessness, her husband wisely suggested that she adopt everyone as her own child. But in those difficult days, before she encountered the teachings that would transform her life, she was lost in the sadness for which she lacked trying to fill the hole. By the end of her life, though, Deepima had indeed become a mother to all. In the place of that hole that needed to be filled, there is simply a heart open to all. And in something, when I was either a talk or one of the videos that she had offered, that I will always be with you, to her students, and not just that in her practice, in our practice, the sense of in her teaching, she's like, just reach out. I'm going to be there in this realm or in any other. So offering it back in 84 when she was teaching at IMS as a live human on this earth, but then offering it, no, I will always be available. And on this eve, in this time when some, as I mentioned before, feel that the veil is thin, to whom do we want to reach to on the, that may be on the other side, that can be a source of strength, motivation, kindness, yeah, whether we know the people or not, right? John O'Donohue was one of those people for me. Never met him, wish I did, but still, I feel like I have a relationship with him wherever he may be, but that we can pull in these allies of ours that we meet through teachings or readings or whatever it is in this realm or in another. And in this time, again, coming up upon Halloween and the Day of the Dead, to whom might we want to reach out to help support us? So I ask you to close your eyes. So letting that question linger. One of the questions that Deepima asked her students to consider was, what's the weakest point of your practice? Is it having a daily practice? Is it working with anger, impatience, being frustrated? Is it sleepiness, boredom? So I just want to pose that question to each of us to consider on this day, and it may be different tomorrow, but in this moment, to consider, what is the weakest point of my practice? Where do we get caught, or what can get in the way of a practice, or where do we judge ourselves for not being better? And just notice what comes up. Maybe a lot of things, there may be one or two things, but just allowing there to be a generosity and feeling into, oh, okay, working with frustration or judging mind, comparing mind, that might be a place of weakness, put in quotes, of our practice, such that, okay, how can we meet that place with the real compassion of, okay, so what if I undertake the practice to work with that? You know, it's that we could switch the word weakness into the opportunity, whereas an opportunity for expanding a sense of ease with our practice. Yeah. Recommitting, again, a sense of spiritual urgency coming in. This is important to me. I'm going to play with this edge. And that's really maybe a better way of holding it. Where's an edge in our practicing? Can we imagine different ways to play with it as a way of deepening our commitment, deepening our understanding of ourselves, and developing our practice? There was something for me in hearing those four words: spiritual urgency, patience, faith, metta. And for me, that was sort of the constellation that seems to have guided Deepama. And the second question in this guided time for you: what is your individual constellation of words or images or felt senses, qualities of the heart that feel reliable? And it might, doesn't mean that there's a level of total skillfulness, maybe equanimity as both aspiration and guiding star. It does not mean that we are always equanimous, but just, oh, that's a quality that I can rely upon. Or generosity, truthfulness, compassion, wisdom, integrity, humor, empathy, forgiveness, whatever the words may be, if you just allow, again, the question to linger, if you were to pick 3-4 words on this day or evening that can help guide you, what might those words be? And again, just seeing what comes, and maybe different words may come on a different day, but in this moment, allowing there to be a kind of a funny word, but almost an ownership. Oh yeah, these are my words. These words I can turn to when I'm really struggling. That these words are also symbols of the heart, right? Qualities of the heart. These traits are trustworthy: faith, compassion, generosity, integrity. Again, humor, whatever the words are, this is a way of kind of having anchors or signposts when we can sometimes get lost in really challenging mind states or times in our lives. So these words as constellations, and then I want to pick that question back up to consider again, given the time of year. Are there any allies in other realms that you might like to pull in to offer gratitude for their teachings, or perhaps maybe relatives that have moved on, that have died? It may be teachers, again, that you never met. But if the veil is thin, who might you like to connect to as a source of strength, inspiration, beauty? And may those energies of those beings infuse your days. So I'm going to stop there. And I thank you so much for your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org. www.lifeaudio.org/donate.